Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Good morning and welcome to 95.7 The Game, where alongside the Pro Bowler Lorenzo Neal, the always diligent Dan Dibley, I'm Joe Fortenball. It is great to have you in today. How about we give away $1,000 at the start of the show? It's time for the 4K Day Cash Contest. Your chance to win $1,000. Text the code word ORDER to 72881, as in law and order, as in your order for dinner. 72881, message and data rates may apply. We've got a big hour coming up. Rookies have reported to Oakland Raiders training camp. Will Brinson is going to join us at 7:15 to talk all things NFL. And in a few moments, we're going to jump right into some training camp battles as well as your phone calls. 888-957-9570. What are your expectations for this team this season? 888-957-9570. Where we begin as gentlemen. Dibs, how was your weekend?
It was great, Joe. Got a chance to see Pablo Sandoval down at the San Jose Giants game on Saturday night. Beautiful night out there at the yard. And had my father-in-law over for a nice barbecue yesterday. The legendary David Brewer and his partner, Issa. So it was nice to do a little family time yesterday.
You look good in a suit, by the way. I saw the picture.
Thank you, Joe.
You look good in a suit.
Your boy was boiling out there, 95 degrees at first pitch at Municipal Stadium, and I was suited and booted low and very unhappy.
Good for you, though. You look nice, look dapper as usual. That's what you do, Dibs. When you need to make, when they call on Dibbers for to make a big play, to look nice, you know how to clean
Thank
up
you,
well.
Coach. That means a lot.
Now, word on the street is that you, Lorenzo Neal, were down at Del Mar, the racetrack with all the beautiful people over the weekend in San Diego?
Yes, I was. Joe, I was in and out. It was a quick trip. I flew out on Sunday at around noon, and they had a deal where they were honoring the Chargers just because they're leaving town, unfortunately. So it was sort of like when, parents get divorced, you still love the kids. The kids weren't at fault, meaning the players aren't at fault for the breakup, San Diego and the Chargers. So they just wanted former players and ex-players to come out there and just, hey, wanted to give you a huge standing O. So it was really neat to go out there and talk to the fans and be close to them and watch the races as well, Joe. It was a neat event.
They flew you down to the racetrack
to
applaud you, and then you turn around and came home.
Came back the next day.
That was your weekend?
Yeah, I flew back on Sunday morning. Yes. That was...
They flew you down Saturday.
Yes, flew up Saturday.
You spent one night and flew back Sunday.
Yes, that's correct.
It's a nice racetrack.
It's a phenomenal racetrack. The atmosphere was absolutely amazing, Joe. Food was great. Everything was great. We had our own little section. It was all Chargers. It was just really, really neat.
Which Chargers?
Mike was there, of course, Deep Ben, our center, Nick Hardwick. All the offensive linemen was there. Kasim Osgood, haven't seen him forever. Hank the Tank. Hank Bauer, all Jimmy Ray, all the great Chargers, Charlie Joyner, Hall of Famer, James Collins, a lot of the different guys that were there, trainers, staff, Ed McGuire, who does contracts. So it was a lot of.
I know Ed.
Yeah. Ed was there.
Yeah, I met him at the Combine years ago. I had a couple cocktails with him. Good dude.
Ed's a good dude. He'll tie a couple on with you.
Yeah, I know. That's literally what I just said. Tied a couple along with him.
No. I didn't drink with him, though.
All right, 888-957-9570. Time to get down to business. Your expectations for this Raiders team this season. All that in just a minute, but right now, here's Dibs with your update.
Top story, Joe. The Raiders camp opens with rookies reporting to Napa, getting set to hit the field at Redwood Middle School in the coming days. Of course, the veteran players will be due in on Friday for the Oakland Raiders. Down in San Francisco 49er land, a full complement of players coming in on Thursday with rookies and veterans reporting together. Story number two, the Giants drop a third out of the four-game set against the Padres.
To right field. Down the right field line. It's off the wall. Off the bat of Jabari Blash. Myers will score. Renfro coming around behind him. Throw to second. Not in time. It's a two-run wall ball double for Jabari Blash, and the Padres have taken a 3-1 lead.
5-2 was the final. That's courtesy Fox Sports San Diego. The Giants will take on the Padres, who are in town for three tonight. Story number three, the A's 10 games below 500 after beating the Mets 3-2. Marcus Semien, Chris Davis, and Matt Chapman, all with home runs. Chapman avoided the GOAT label after getting picked off third with no outs earlier in the game before hitting the game-ending, or the game-winning, rather, home run. Bob Melvin wins career victory number 999. They're in Toronto today. 3:15 dugout show, 4:07 first pitch here on 95.7 The Game. That's your update. I'm Dan Dibley on your home of the Golden State Warriors, 95.7 The Game.
Thank you, Dibs. $1,000 to give away at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. Jolo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. I'm of the belief that if it's not the quarterback position, a first-round pick in the National Football League has to be a contributor in year one. Doesn't have to be a star player, but he's got to be a contributor, especially on a team like the Oakland Raiders. When you are this close to elite-level competition, meaning the AFC Championship game, which I think we're all eyeing up this season, your first-round pick has to be someone that can come in and contribute. And at the current moment, Oakland Raiders first-round pick, Gerrion Conley, is one of four NFL players from the 2017 draft class who remains unsigned. The other three, Solomon Thomas, the number two overall pick of the San Francisco 49ers, although the Niners have 3 days to get him signed for the start of camp, and all indications are that they will. Corey Davis, wide receiver out of Western Michigan, number five overall pick to the Tennessee Titans. And then Oakland Raiders' second-round pick, Obi Melifonwu, the safety out of UConn. Melifonwu and Conley, the Raiders' first two picks, two of the four individuals, the only four individuals from the 2017 class who are still unsigned. Low, from Conley's perspective, we know about the sexual assault allegations. We're hoping everything gets cleared up and he's available to not only sign, but to contribute. But we've got Amerson and Sean Smith as the starting corners right now. The vision has to be that Conley at some point down the road will be a starting corner for this team. But right now, all we can be thinking about is the nickel corner position, right?
Yes.
Because how can you unseat one of the veteran starters when you aren't even signed?
Right, and it won't be Sean. And I think, Joe, that's why you look at the rookies, they're coming in. It's to get these guys a lot of reps right now. They're not coming in, you know, it's going to be still another 3-4 days for the veterans. This is by design. You know that you have a team that is going to solely depend a lot on this defense, a lot of different things. So they want these guys, the chemistry, to start right away. Because when the camp starts, Joe and Dibs, everyone doesn't get as many reps. The reps are limited because you know that what you're leading it to. So this is this week right now where these young players really get a lot of on-the-field time, a lot of attention to details, the learning of everything. So this is really important for a lot of teams. I think, though, Joe, I understand what's going on behind closed doors. Everyone's talking about the sex allegations. I get that, and you have to respect that. But you got to realize it's a reason why the safety hasn't signed as well. It's a reason why Solomon Thomas hadn't signed, because those guys, go look at the guys that haven't signed. They're usually guys that are in position to make a lot of plays, position that they're going to be walked in on day one, pencil in as a starter, that they're going to contribute a lot of minutes to these teams. So it behooves them and their agent to make sure they get a lot of deals. I know that guys are slotted. You're slotted what you're going to do, but it's those likely to be earned and likely not to be earned bonuses. You want to make sure that you have those incentives in place, especially when you're a rookie that on the Raider team, especially when they're talking about the secondary, so you might be put in right away. You want to make sure you maximize the dollars and the opportunity. So I think a lot of this stuff is to do also with these bonuses.
Dibs, how big of a concern is this, the Conley situation, in regards to the big picture for the Raiders this season? Because if I throw it out to the phone lines, 888-957-9570, and we ask, what is your biggest concern for the Oakland Raiders in 2017? Would it be the Conley situation, or would it be something else in your opinion?
It might be the middle linebacker question mark, because sure, if Conley comes in, he's not going to be the number one cornerback. He's going to be a piece, albeit a critical piece and maybe a depth piece that you certainly need in the National Football League. But I think middle linebacker still would be a bigger concern. But to Lowe's point, he said the word reps, and that's the one thing that really hit me, because you want your young players in for as much time as possible. And I know Conley was there for OTAs and other activities before camp, but this is when the real reps start. And if you're not out there on the field, it's impossible for the coaches to get a sense for exactly what you can do. And if you start to fall behind, then come regular season games, if you're not in the main rotation, then you're not getting game reps. And so it's going to retard his development even more.
We talked earlier. Go ahead.
I believe both these young men will be signed by Friday. Before the veterans all come in, I think they'll be signed. Hey, I've been on teams where guys don't come in the first week. Sean Merriman lights out. A lot of guys didn't come into Dornier right before the opening day. So, guys, you saw Joey Bosa. Hell, with San Diego, he didn't have any problems. But when did he sign? He signed week one. So you see these things would happen, Joe. So this, everyone, I know everyone's talking about what's going on over the head. I really believe that they're still going to sign. I believe these guys are going to be on the field, both these guys. But I just think that sometimes with rookies, sometimes their agent hold them out, not necessarily saying it's a good thing. But I think these guys will be in camp.
And it's so bizarre to see some of that now, though. With the new collective bargaining agreement, these contracts are slotted. There's not a lot of room for negotiating. So a lot of times it comes down to offset language. And offset language is, well, if the player ends up moving on to another team or he's released, how much is the current team responsible for versus the other team? We don't need to get too much into that. But that was the big holdup with Joey Bosa in San Diego. And that's why it took so long to get that deal done. Contracts shouldn't necessarily be a problem. Like for Corey Davis in Tennessee right now, that's got to be a concern for the Titans, that their number one pick, who's supposed to be a playmaker weapon coming in to join Marcus Mariota, that's got to be a major concern that they don't have him under contract at the moment.
Yeah, it is. Yo, and not just that. Here's the thing, though. Who you think's informing these guys? You think these guys know all the contract jargon and all the language? Hell no.
It's not their responsibility
Right. So it's these agents and these attorneys that they have. And, you know, some of them don't have their best interests in hand, and some of them do. Some of them want to maximize the dollar, and some of them's like, look, you can't fight over $3,000, $4,000 or $20,000. I think some of these agents, they don't give these young men the right advice, and they said, see what I did, I held out for this, and because they're thinking about future clients as well. So I just think that, you know, it's not the smartest thing to do, especially for rookies. But a lot of these guys, Joe, go on to have great careers. So sometimes you got to do it. Look at Joey Bosa, hell of a year last year,
big season. AFC West loaded with pass rushers: Miller, Mack, the boys in Kansas City, yeah. Joey Bosa.
Sure.
You've got a really good conference, or I should say division, of pass rushers. We spoke in the last hour about training camp battles, and we focused on the middle linebacker position. I want to talk about wide receiver number three. We know it's Crabtree, and we know it's Amari Cooper, but the number three wide receiver position, Seth Roberts versus Cordarrelle Patterson, the free agent who was signed from the Minnesota Vikings this past offseason. How do you see that camp battle playing out? Loney, I'll begin with you.
I think that Patterson, here's what you have in Patterson. You have a guy that can fly. He's a great kick returner. This guy's going to get a lot of reps. He's going to be returning kicks. You know this guy can change the game by one kickoff return. He's that electric. He's that explosive. This is a guy now, when you look at Crabtree and Amari Cooper, you know what Crabtree brings. He's a guy that's a possession receiver. Amari Cooper can run. He's fast, but he gets in and out of break. Now you have Patterson now that you can't double. You can no longer sit and say, I'm going to double Crabtree or double Amari Cooper, because this guy can stretch so fast. No corner is going to be able to run with him man-to-man, Joe. So you're going to have to play over the top safety. So you're going to create mismatches. So I believe, in my opinion, and I think Seth Roberts has played a great year, showing that he's got some upside. I really believe that it's Patterson because of his speed.
Seth Roberts has caught 70 passes for 877 yards with 10 touchdowns in his career. He's a two-year veteran. But both of those seasons, dibs have been with Derek Carr. He's got to have the advantage heading into camp, right? He's already got that rapport with DC.
And I think that's a big reason why he gets the number three receiver job. And in all due respect to Lo Neal, I think Cordarrelle Patterson will be focused more on being that return guy. Certainly kickoff return, punt return, we're yet to see. And I think also as a fourth wide receiver, you get him in some of those jet sweeps and you get him the football as a runner, something that they haven't done a lot of. You know, certainly they don't run a lot of screen plays, and they don't do a lot of the jet sweep action. Tywan Jones would be the guy who would run that before. But with Patterson, I think you want to get him the ball as a runner as much as you do as a receiver.
Patterson was a first-round pick out of Tennessee and was a massive disappointment in four seasons with the Vikings. Do you know who he reminds me of if you want an NBA comp? JaVale McGee. He reminds me of JaVale McGee. You're going to bring him in cheap, and you're going to put him in a situation that's hopefully very limited. He can blow the top off a defense, but he's not a disciplined route runner, and he makes mistakes with his route running on a consistent basis. You can't have that in this offense. You've got to run what the quarterback needs you to run. And I think what you've got is if you take this guy and you use him on special teams, but you put him in a limited role on offense and tell him to just blow the roof off the top of that secondary, either he's beating his man deep or he's opening up, like you said, Lowe, the underneath stuff for Cooper and Crabtree. I think that is your comp for Cordarrelle Patterson, JaVale McGee. I think that's what you can try to hope for with him this season, because the expectations out of Tennessee were extremely high, never came close to meeting him in Minnesota.
You're absolutely right. And when I was saying, I think that both these guys, Seth and Patterson, is going to play, and both these guys are going to play. I think they're both going to be that slot guy at times because of the fact the different dimensions they both bring one another.
Will Brinson is a senior writer for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter. He's an excellent follow on Twitter, at Will Brinson. He's joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Will, good morning, and thank you for your time. We'll bring you right into the Raider conversation we're having. We're in the Raider bubble here, so our expectations are extraordinarily high. But for you, someone who's covered the business for a long time, who's been around the league for a long time, when you look at the Oakland Raiders this season, what are your expectations for this team?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Good morning. The Cordarrelle Patterson thing is fascinating because I remember watching him absolutely carve up NC State's defense in the season opener for Tennessee and thinking, man, this guy is going to be special at the next level. And I think the comp actually there is pretty interesting because if you can utilize him and maximize his skill set, you know, in comparison to the other talented receivers that the Raiders have, then you have a valuable piece. It remains to be seen if that's something a team can do, because Minnesota certainly couldn't do it. As for the Raiders' expectations as a whole, you know, I think part of the problem in the NFL, when you win 12 games and get really lucky, and I don't mean that the Raiders were not good and lucky. I just mean that they got, you know, they had the fortunate luck of the oblong ball bouncing in their direction more often than not, particularly when it came to one score games. Something that we typically see regression for. And then you go out and you sign your quarterback to a $125 million contract, and it looks like you don't really have a ton of weaknesses. I think people start looking at this team and saying, all right, you know, this is a Super Bowl caliber team. And I mean, I would assume that the expectations inside that bubble are that falling short of a division title and the AFC championship would probably be disappointing. But I think those are probably a little bit heightened and maybe a little bit out of whack given just how much parity there is in the NFL, just how dangerous that the division is in the AFC West, and just how often we see a little bit of regression from teams that play well in those close games, especially when they win 12.
When you look at around the league and think about some of the rookies, notably, you know, Solomon from San Francisco 49ers, Conley here with the Raiders, and you see the young receiver in Tennessee that hasn't signed yet. Is Conley the one that you're most worried about because of legal allegations, or do you just look at this as just going to work its process because Raiders have two rookies that they drafted pretty high and neither are signed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, you know, I tell you what, that's kind of in the pantheon of underreported 2017 stories, the Gary and Conley stuff might fall in there along with Ezekiel Elliott and Andrew Luck's shoulder. The people were just not, maybe we're not talking about it enough for whatever reason. But yeah, I think it's a concern. I mean, I think, you know, you want to see it work itself out. Certainly though, you know, the Raiders, because of where they drafted him, one would ascertain that they were in a position, and you have to trust Reggie McKenzie because of the job he's done in building up this roster and acquiring talent and putting together, I think, what is a team that has a lot of good chemistry, that he has done his due diligence to make sure that everything will be fine on that front. But sure, I think a little bit of a concern. There's rookie contracts though, in this, you know, with this new CBA. I mean, it's wild just how uninteresting those signings are in terms of moving the needle. I mean, I remember, you know, when we were, you know, back in 09 and 10 before the lockout and the new CBA, you know, you would have a lot of breathless reporting about what sort of contract was going to be negotiated by top picks because you had a domino effect down the board. And now it's just hop in your slot and let's move on, man.
The Niners still waiting on Solomon Thomas, and pending that move, which I'm sure he'll come in and be signed, what are the expectations for 49er fans as far as steps forward this season?
Yeah, I think a lot. I mean, a lot. Like, the expectations are high, or maybe the expectations might be higher than the Raiders relative to where they were, right? I mean, I think 49ers fans are hoping for a 6-10 season. And that would take a lot of magic from Kyle Shanahan to pull it off, because I think that this 49ers team, when you look at it, as much of a good job as I believe John Lynch and Shanahan did this offseason, it's still pretty bereft of talent. I mean, you know, they're trotting out a combo of Brian Hoyer and Pierre Garçon. I mean, you don't, like, if you do that in your fantasy league, you're finishing last. I mean, that's, and they're doing it in the real NFL. So, I mean, that's, you know, good luck. I think Garçon is actually going to be an underrated player because he knows the system. And I think Hoyer is a guy that, you know, you're not going to have this spectacular failure, but you're also, there's a pretty high floor and a really low ceiling, right? And I think that's a pretty good thing for the 49ers in year one of Kyle Shanahan's system. Still on the table that Kirk Cousins could be a trade option. You can't rule that out completely. Defensively is where I think they get really interesting, because, you know, assuming that they'll get Thomas in there, I would assume they have a lot of bodies in that front seven that could make life difficult for opposing quarterbacks. And, you know, you start to kind of think about that division. None of the teams in that division are really stout on the offensive line. I mean, the Cardinals probably had the best offensive line, of those group. And there's still a lot of, you know, unknowns. DJ Humphries is a big question mark in terms of his development as a former first round pick. The Seahawks have not done a lot to address their position. I love the signing of Andrew Whitworth by the Rams. But if you're the 49ers, you can sort of look at this as maybe an advantage within the division, that you have these bodies you can throw, as pass rushers and as big men in the trenches, and maybe take advantage of some weaker defensive lines. So I think if you're San Francisco, what you want to see more than anything is sort of the development of Kyle Shanahan's system on offense. Maybe you hope Carlos Hyde plays well. I think he's being underrated as a guy who could succeed in that system personally. And then you hope to see a real impressive production out of that front seven, including, you know, hopefully Reuben Foster and of course, Solomon Thomas.
Will Brinson of CBS Sports with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Catch him out on Twitter at Will Brinson. Will, thank you for your time this morning. We always appreciate it. Have a great week, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yeah, guys, let's do it anytime. Have a good day.
As it pertains to the 49ers, rookies and vets are going to report in 3 days. 3 days' time. We've talked about reasonable expectations for the Raiders. We'll get into that with the Niners. But with Brian Hoyer, we view him as a placeholder, do we not?
Yes.
In that role, what is a reasonable expectation for Hoyer as a quarterback this year? This is a fascinating season for the 49ers, because we have gone back and forth. Kaepernick, Gabbert, over the last few years. It's a clean slate down there in Santa Clara this season.
It really is. You know what you're going to get out of Hoyer. You're going to get a guy that's going to play with guts, bravado, give it everything he has, but he's limited. He's limited in throwing the ball. Let's be real about what you have. You have a guy that really loves football, who plays with effort and grit. He's a John Kitna, but probably a step below. But he's going to go out, and you know he's going to be organized. You know he's going to push guys. He's going to get in guys' face, because this guy believes that he's a leader in this. He believes he's a starter in this league. I don't know if he's necessarily a starter, but he's shown that he has some leadership quality. So it's a clean slate. Look for this guy to battle. Not going to go out and take over games and win you games. He's a guy that can manage games, and hopefully if they're good enough, they can win a couple games. But the 49ers' expectations should be high, but they just want to compete and be in games. Just don't want to see them blown out. I want to see this team compete.
Dibs, week one, Carolina -6 at San Francisco. Which direction would you go if you had to make the pick now?
I think I would take Carolina on that one, given the 6. And it's tough, though, because the 49ers, 5 of their first 8 are on the road. So you start to look at which among those games is winnable. You've got the Rams at home week 3. That certainly is winnable. Dallas is one of your first 3 home games. That's tough. And then the opener against Carolina. So as you start to try to find wins for this team in the first 8, this Carolina game might be one where it's one you got to win if you're San Francisco. So maybe taking the 6 might be a little bit headier as we get closer to it.
Lo, do you agree?
Yeah, I do. Maybe taking the 6 might be a little more headier. But Carolina, let's face it, they had a very dismal year last year. And Cam Newton understands that. You have a quarterback, you have a team now that seems like they're We kind of got their energy back because of the firing of the GM, hearing guys saying they want to play there. I think that you're going to see Carolina kind of a bounce back year for this team. Last year, they under succeeded.
By doing absolutely nothing, the Golden State Warriors' position this past weekend improved as it pertains to a possible third title in four seasons. That plus Draymond Green versus Conor McGregor next. Joe Low and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
We've got $1,000 to give away in about 30 minutes at 8 o'clock as the 4K a day cash contest has returned. What's up, everybody? Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Joe, Lowe, and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Jim Bowden will join us in about an hour to talk a little MLB. We've got to get into the news of the weekend. Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, everything that's taking place in Cleveland. But before we do that, did you guys see the Instagram battle that broke out between Draymond Green and Conor McGregor?
Tell us about it.
So Conor, in his effort, and he's doing a remarkable job of promoting this fight, in his effort to continue trolling Floyd Mayweather, to continue bringing attention to the fight, he was wearing a Warriors 23 jersey.
Okay.
A picture of Conor in a Warriors 23 jersey surfaced. And we all know Draymond Green wears number 23 for the Warriors now, but this is a Warrior throwback jersey.
Yeah.
And Draymond takes a picture of Conor in this jersey, throws it up on Instagram, and says, "We rocking with Floyd, bro, not you. Take that off, bruh." Is that how you pronounce that? B-R-U-H?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it bruh?
Bruh.
Bruh. Take that off, bruh. And he sends it to at the Notorious MMA, which is Conor McGregor's account.
Yeah.
Now, Conor fires back, as he is wont to do, and says the following: "That's CJ Watson, mate. I don't know who the expletive you are. No disrespect, though, kid. Keep hustling and stay in school."
Wow.
He continues, "Now ask yourself why I'm rocking a CJ Watson when I don't know or give an expletive about basketball. I dribble heads off the floor, not a ball. This is no game here, kid." Now, for those of you who are just catching up to this,
he won.
CJ Watson, former Warrior, rumored to be involved at a time with Floyd Mayweather's former girlfriend. So McGregor wears the Watson jersey to troll Mayweather because his woman was apparently stepping out on him with Watson. Draymond gets involved, and from Conor McGregor, "No disrespect, though, kid. Keep hustling and stay in school.
Great one.
McGregor won that one.
I mean, let's be honest. We're all Draymond fans here, but it's probably Conor 1, Draymond nothing, Dibs.
That's a 10-9 round. It's not a 10-8. No, he didn't knock him down.
He crushed him.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah, Draymond came at him pretty strong.
He
won the early part of the round, but then Conor turned it on him and stay in school. I mean, that's incredible.
I know.
That's like you with your son. It's like I told you 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Wait for it, son. It's the same sort of punctuation mark. I love it.
And when he did that, that made it a 10-8. But then when he did that, that made it a 10-9. But the climax when he hit him with the end of that thing statement was like, "I box. I don't dribble the basketball. I knock heads
I dribble
off.
Heads off
yeah,
the canvas.
I mean, that's the one that took it to 10-8.
It's good material. I still got a 10-9. Okay. Although, I might be like the Pacquiao horn judge. 10-9 Draymond.
Yeah, 10-8 Draymond.
Yeah, Jesus. These judges.
I'll tell you what, though. If you're Draymond, do you fire back at that or do you just let that go? Do you realize you lost that round 10-9, 10-8, however you see it, and it's just you let it go and you move on? Conor, you want to step into the pantheon of the game's best trash talkers right now? Mount Trashmore, or that might actually lead to a
Oscar the Grouch is on that mount.
Oscar the Grouch.
No doubt. He loves trash. Mount Trash Talkmore?
Yeah. Who would we be talking about from Mount Trash Talkmore right now? You've got to figure Connor's going to immediately be in the discussion
without a doubt
for the top four spots current day trash talkers. Now, Ali, all time, is going to be in the Washington position, I would imagine.
Without a doubt. He's the one who broke the mold on the trash talk. You got me thinking, Joe. I'm going to have to really poke through it to do respect to the mount, but without a doubt, Conor McGregor is on there. Floyd Mayweather's not on there, in my opinion. After what Conor was doing at their head-to-head.
Conor took him to the woodshed.
Yeah.
Floyd used to be pretty good, had some things that he could do, but you've seen Floyd now stumped. He's gotten Floyd getting motorboated. He motorboated.
Well, it's all an act. That's the thing, too. You have to remember the roles each of these guys play. Mayweather has to play the role of the villain. That's been his thing. Ever since he was smart enough to realize back around the De La Hoya era, which was like 2008, 2007, when he came out wearing the Mexican trunks on Mexican, I believe, Independence Day, or Cinco de Mayo, when he fought Oscar De La Hoya. That's when he understood the marketing side of boxing. He's always been a great boxer. But once he figured out the marketing side, that by turning heel, no longer Pretty Boy Floyd, but Floyd Money Mayweather, by turning heel, there was more money to be made. He is the ultimate villain. So in this situation, he's got to play the role of villain. Connor has done a tremendous job of just playing the role of fan favorite in this, despite the fact that a lot of what he said has been abrasive, although that's something that should have been expected going into this.
And I think a guy who doesn't get the credit that he deserved, he won it all the time. I don't think he ever lost a battle, Dibs. I think you would agree, because I think everyone was scared of him. Mike Tyson, he would say some crazy stuff, and nobody would even comment because he'd get in the ring and pretty much kill you.
Well, he's crazy. I mean, he tried to eat a man in the ring, so, you know, that's not so much trash talk anymore.
I'll eat his children.
Yeah, I'm going to eat his children. I mean, when I get in the ring with you, I mean, it's totally ludicrous. I mean, you're going to get in there, I'm going to try to take your head, and I'm going to put my fist through your nose, through your brain.
That's a terrible Tyson.
I'm
going to
hit him through the brain. He chokes and hope his kids die. I don't care.
You sound like one of those guys from Insane in the Membrane.
Cypress Hill.
Thank you. Cypress Hill. You sound a little too Cypress Hill. Immediately as I'm trying to erect this mount, Joe, and again, it's tough at this hour to get it fully put together, Richard Sherman's got to be on the mount.
Sherman does a nice job. Sherman, you see, the key to effective trash talk is it's not so much the volume of words you spit. Some guys are just constantly running their mouths. You've got to be able to have the hammer. You've got to be able to drop that line that gets the ooh, like Connor did with the no disrespect though, kid. Keep hustling and stay in school. Like right there, and people are telling us on the text line, thank you very much for this 95795 PenskeAutosales.com text line, that Draymond did in fact respond. I don't see that in any of the articles I read this morning. That lets you know that Connor went ahead and won that battle. You put him in the top four. Richard Sherman's another one that talks quite a bit.
Wow. I'm thinking Yasiel Puig, but I'm not sure if it's so much trash talk as it is just showboating. It's a fine line between the two because he will definitely show you up when he goes yard on you.
That's probably two different mores,
correct,
would it not be?
Yes.
Two different mores.
Two mount different
show
mounts
up more,
for sure.
And then mount trash talk more.
I love how you've embraced this phenomenon. It's great.
Well, it's great content is what it is, but the trash talk element to it, it feels like we don't have some in the NBA. Who do you have? Who would be your best NBA trash talker? Draymond's out there running his mouth quite a bit, and he does a nice job. From an NBA perspective, he might be top four. Kevin Garnett was always one of the best in the business. I remember when Kalena Azubuike was in studio with us the one day, he said that was the one guy of all of them that used to really stand out. Like, he would just really find the personal stuff that could just grind you down. Because there are multiple ways to go about it. Sometimes you're going to hit them on something on the personal front, and then you'll lead into the conversation of what is and is not off limits. Like, Lo, in all the years you played, you didn't do a lot of talking out there, but you know some that did.
Oh,
who were some of the greats?
Well, come on. Your boy Ray talked trash. I mean, there's a lot of guys. There's a guy named Rainier. You probably didn't hear about him much, but the linebacker would talk junk. There is, you know, you look at certain guys that just had that bravado, certain linebackers, defensive linemen. Sarah Guza would talk all the time. I remember playing against Sapp. He'd be yelling on the other side of the field. You're like, dude, just shut up and play.
Here, Warren Sapp.
Yeah, Warren talk junk. I mean, LT was a guy who talked trash but backed it up. There's a lot of guys that, you know, that talked a lot of crap but didn't back it up.
News from Stephen A. Smith. Is this from him on Twitter or is this First Take or what do we got?
Wait for it.
We'll go ahead and check that back out in a little bit as we get organized. Interesting news that's coming out on LeBron. So that'll segue us into the Kyrie Irving news from over the weekend. He, on Friday, the word gets out, wants a trade out of Cleveland. Now, this caught a lot of people off guard because you figured no matter what side you were on, Cleveland had at least one more year to compete with Golden State. This appears to be trouble in paradise. Kyrie, no longer interested in being second fiddle. He doesn't want to have to share the spotlight with LeBron James. And you know what? To an extent, when he signed that five-year deal with Cleveland, he was under the impression that it was going to be his team. And then out of nowhere, LeBron James, not so much out of nowhere, but LeBron James makes the announcement that he's leaving Miami and he's coming back. And according to reports, that rubbed Irving and some other Cavaliers the wrong way because LeBron never even checked in with them. right? He never even checked in with current Cavs to say, how do you feel about me coming back? You think we can all work together? Just the courtesy phone call. Not to say that he has to do it, but that that might be considered good business. Trouble in paradise and an interesting report from Stephen A. Smith as to what's next. Lo Neal has got a great conspiracy theory on this. Joe Lo and Dibs back in a flash, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. $1,000 to give away at 8 o'clock, as well as some Oakland Raider conversation. Rookies report to camp today. It's time to get into our concerns for the season. It's time to get into some training camp battles. It's time to get into expectations. We will take all of your calls on the matter at 8 o'clock. But the news at the moment centers around the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kyrie Irving, LeBron James. For those just joining us, on Friday, word got out that Kyrie Irving was seeking a trade. Yesterday, Sunday, word gets out that LeBron James, making it very clear, as one of three members in the NBA with a no trade clause, he will not be waiving that at any point this season. He fully intends to play out at least the final year of his contract with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Stephen A. Smith on SportsCenter recently had this to say, quote, according to my sources, they believe LeBron James had everything to do with news getting out that Kyrie Irving wants to be traded, because Kyrie and his representation and others met with the Cavaliers a couple weeks ago, and not a word got out until recently. Smith continues regarding his sources. They believe that LeBron James got word of it and was put off by it and leaked it. I'm not going to accuse LeBron of such a thing. I don't know that to be true at all, but I know that's what Kyrie Irving believes. Trouble in paradise here, Lo Neal, because this is a team that was once again considered to be the favorites to challenge the Warriors. And now suddenly the top two members of the organization seem to be feuding with one another.
Yeah, if that's the case, the way you laid it out, then I would say there could be trouble. And maybe I'm going to recant my earlier statement. But here's why I was thinking that, because it was a couple weeks ago that Kyrie Irving came out and said, if LeBron leaves, I would want to go play with him. I want out. I'll play my contract. But when he leaves, I'll go play with LeBron. That's what Kyrie said a couple weeks ago. It was also rumored that a couple weeks ago that Butler was thinking about coming there, and they maybe got a call from one of the guys and killed that. Paul George was on the trade block for maybe with the Cavs. They said, don't come here. Why? And then they recanted and said, oh, we don't want to be with Cleveland. So I think that was players. You talk about guys have good friendships. That was players. So when you think about, now you think about, okay, Kyrie went a couple weeks ago and asked to be traded, knowing that LeBron was going to opt out. But then a couple weeks ago, he still said the same thing, that I would play with LeBron. So if that was the case, I was thinking these guys wanted to hook up. But now when it's hearing that LeBron might have leaked it, then there could be problems.
Do you remember it wasn't that long ago that LeBron James was the guy who had more juice in the NBA than any player? He could make more happen than anybody. He wants to form a big three in Miami, boom, it's done. He wants to leave Miami and put a team together in Cleveland, boom, it's done. Think about what's happened over the last couple weeks if you're LeBron James. Two separate players have told you no. Jamal Crawford, who he recruited to Cleveland, told him no, I'd rather sign with Minnesota. Jamal Crawford signed with the Timberwolves instead of joining LeBron James in Cleveland. And then this, Kyrie Irving making it clear he doesn't want to play with LeBron James anymore. He wants to leave. He's not going to be the last man on the Titanic two seasons from now when LeBron's already left for L.A. and he's stuck with this terrible team in the final year of his contract. Two separate players have told LeBron no. What does that say about LeBron James right now, Dibs?
It tells you that he doesn't have the same power he used to. And as a player, he's not as fun to play with as some of these other guys. And if you're Jamal Crawford, super six man, you look at the situation in Cleveland, and yeah, you'd have a great chance to maybe compete for a championship, but there's not a lot of shots to go around. And you've seen what's happened to the other bench players in Cleveland when LeBron's out there playing 42 minutes a night in the biggest games of the year. Crawford may not be able to get off the bench. And with Kyrie Irving, you're seeing a certain sense that maybe it's not as fun for him to play with LeBron James and have to defer to LeBron. So I think this trend is going to continue until LeBron realizes that maybe he'll have to go somewhere else and be not necessarily the dominant force anymore, but be a part of an ensemble of stars at his next team.
Why would LeBron leak this? If he gets word that 2 weeks ago Kyrie's behind the scenes trying to force a trade, why would LeBron James leak this? Because by leaking it, it crushes Cleveland's leverage. When it's a secret, you can move this guy for more than when it's public. Because when it's public, everyone knows the guy wants out. You're going to get literally dollars back on dimes on the dollar for Kyrie Irving. You're not going to get full value for him knowing he wants out. But at least when it's secret, if you're shopping into something that other teams may think you're just floating out there, like the idea that we heard about Paul George and the Warriors, that possible thing, you might get a better deal on it. So why would LeBron float this? Why would LeBron leak this low?
I think that LeBron James, if he leaks it, if you ask me, in my opinion, why would he and what would he have to gain? I don't think he gains anything, but I think if Kyrie went and asked for a trade without telling him and brought his representation there to say, trade me right now, let me, I want out of here. If he did that, I think LeBron was like, shame on you. You're going to go behind my back and try to trade, but me and you've been hugging and kissing and we're boys and you tell me, hey, you're coming back where I want to go. I want to go play with you. And all of a sudden now you're asking for a trade. Then if you just ask me outside looking in, then LeBron saying, I want you to know that I know. You didn't think I was going to find out? This owner, whoever, someone told me that you wanted a trade. So I'm going to leak it to show you that, look, I do know everything that goes on behind here. So you just slapped me in the face and said, oh, I'll go play with LeBron. I want to go play with him. He's out. I'm going to go with him. And all of a sudden, a week later, you're in that office saying, hey, trade me. I don't want anyone to know. It's confidential. So that's why I think that LeBron would leak it if that's the case.
Right now, if you have to bet, you have to make a pick. You can either have the Cleveland Cavaliers to win the Eastern Conference next season, or you can have everybody else in the East, the field. Who would you take?
Oh, it's simple, the field.
You're taking the field?
I think everyone's going to take the field this year. You look at what's going on there in Cleveland, it's a lot of uncertainties. You just got a GM. LeBron's saying he's not going to opt out. Kyrie's demanding a trade. And Kyrie, by the way, you can hear it. It's pretty strong that he's going to be there. If these guys really, if it's that bad, which I thought that they were both planning at to get hooked back to reunite in L.A. with the Clippers, I think that I don't think you can pick these guys to be the favorite in the East. No way.
Dibs. The Cavs or the field?
I'm taking the field.
Really?
Lowe's right. Even if Kyrie comes back and to play this season, you've got dysfunctionality across the board. Kyrie Irving has grown tired of being second banana to LeBron James. And if LeBron truly is the one who leaked this news, trying to undermine Kyrie Irving and undermine the Cleveland Cavaliers as well, that's about as dysfunctional as it gets. And to your point about why would LeBron leak this, if he's leaving Cleveland anyway, he clearly has hard feelings toward ownership. So I don't know if he has lost his love for the organization, but the GM that Kyrie liked is gone. The owner who no one likes is still there. And if LeBron James is really plotting his exit from Cleveland, then why not go scorched earth?
It's not just about scorched earth. This guy has got a total career in public relations as a PR maestro when he's done with the NBA. Follow every domino that's fallen since the end of the season, and LeBron James is making it very clear, if you read between the lines, that he's leaving. But he can't just leave. Remember, when he left Cleveland last time, they're burning his jerseys. The reaction he got, you can say what you want about that. He's got a ton of money. He's living in South Beach. That hurts. That's your hometown. He was viewed as the savior for that organization. They were a dumpster fire. They drafted him with the number one pick coming out of what? St. Mary's, whatever it was called. He comes out and he immediately makes them relevant. The value of the franchise goes up. The value of the properties around the stadium goes up. People are into Cavalier basketball. He puts this loser organization on his back. He carries them to the finals. He makes them relevant. He gives you everything you could want as a Cleveland fan. And then he decides to leave because he wants to do something for himself. And he is vilified in his own hometown. To some extent, that's got to sting. So he comes back. He comes back to deliver the promise that he originally set out to achieve. And he pulls it off. He gets him a championship. But now he realizes that at the end of his career, maybe I don't want to spend my winters in Cleveland. Maybe I got a taste of the high life in Miami and I want to go to LA now. My wife wants to go to LA. Maybe my kids would like Southern California more. Sunshine over whatever it is to offer in Cleveland. Why go through that if you don't have to? So he's plotting his exit. But he remembers the last time. He can't be vilified his way out the door. He doesn't want the shine of that title that he brought them to be tarnished by another exit. So he has to set up the perfect exit. So what does he do? Number one, as we enter free agency, suddenly there's the general manager being forced out. LeBron immediately with a tweet. Love you, Griffin. Goes on and on about how much he loved the GM. Sorry to see it. Then he goes ahead and leaks the story that he was not in favor of that. He liked Griffin. That wasn't his move. That's Dan Gilbert with the dysfunction. Then it's the Jimmy Butler thing. Then it's the Paul George thing. Now it's this. He leaks this to make Kyrie look like the bad guy, like you guys mentioned. And it checks all the boxes so that when he eventually decides to leave, nobody in Cleveland's going to blame him. They're going to look to Dan Gilbert. They're going to look to Kyrie. LeBron is doing an excellent job of painting a picture of dysfunction in Cleveland. Dysfunction that doesn't involve him. Remember, he's playing at a high level. He's a superstar. Lots of minutes, lots of points. He's doing everything imaginable. The people of Cleveland will never be able to blame him when he leaves because there's so much else out there. He's doing a tremendous job of setting the stage for his exit.
Yeah, Joe, and I'll tell you right now, the true basketball fans and the true people that pay attention to details, they know who to blame. I know who to blame. You know who to blame. And Dibs knows who to blame. And look no further than here. The Dubs. The Dubs is the blame for all this demise in Cleveland. Let's keep it 100. If the Dubs aren't here, this team, the Cavs that is, who have just won 3 championships in a row, we'd be talking about that as a dynasty. You look at it, Dele, if Kyrie's not hurt, Love's not hurt, who knows what happens that the first NBA Finals? Who knows? Say if, for instance, if they did win that one, then they won last year, and they don't have KD necessarily, and they win this year. Would we even be having this conversation? The Dubs have caused a lot of uncertainty in Cleveland, and I think that that itself has caused the demise of the Cavs. Can't beat them. Join them.
Jeff and El Sobrante, thank you for the phone call. Your thoughts on the trade conspiracy regarding Kyrie Irving and LeBron James?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, so I'm on the fence here about this subject, and I'm looking at it like, LeBron is looking out for his little brother. LeBron knows he's leaving. He doesn't want to leave Kyrie stuck in Cleveland with all that dysfunction for another 2 years. So this is their behind-the-scenes way of getting Kyrie out of there before LeBron leaves and takes that franchise down in flames exactly like they did his jersey when he first left. If you think back on a month ago when they were highly recruiting these players, to create another super team, the next day, oh, no, don't come to Cleveland, they're dysfunction. That's when LeBron and Kyrie came to the conclusion that they were going to take this franchise down. Thanks for taking my call.
Lo, that's exactly what you said an hour ago. You think that these two are working behind the scenes to orchestrate Irving's exit so that perhaps they could play together in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that was another theory that I had, because if you look at what happened a couple weeks ago, you heard Kyrie talking about how he loves LeBron. You see these guys hugging. He's waiting for him after the game to patting each other on the head. They have a kindred spirit for one another. So you look at it, Kyrie says, hey, he'll play with him. So now LeBron says, hey, look, man, I'm out of here. I'm not coming back. Butler didn't come. Paul George didn't come. I'm out of here. So if you think about it, LeBron has his house in L.A. Now if Kyrie can get traded a year earlier, now he doesn't have to wait for that last year. LeBron's a year younger. Instead of waiting for Kyrie, then Kyrie can already be there for a year if that trade goes down in L.A. or the team that they decide they're going to play for. LeBron said he has exercises no trade clause, so next year he can go wherever he wants. I was thinking these two wanted to team up, and I thought they were trying to fool the Cavs.
Are LeBron and Kyrie Irving working behind the scenes to orchestrate Irving's departure from Cleveland? 888-957-9570. Are these two trying to hustle Dan Gilbert? Your phone calls plus $1,000 to give away in 1 minute. Don't go anywhere. Jolo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.